Welcome to the IgG4 edition of Rare Disease Advisors' Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the IgG4 community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, special correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Our guest today is Donna Shipp, a nurse and mother who resides just north of Boston. She lived for 6 months thinking that she had cancer, until she was properly diagnosed in July 2023 with immunoglobulin G4-related disease, abbreviated as IgG4-RD. Donna, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us your story, if you would.
So, briefly, you know, in about August, September of 2022, I was starting to have some pain after I was eating, and I just thought it was very innocently, you know, probably gallbladder issues. So I mentioned it to my doctor, and she ordered a routine ultrasound just to check my gallbladder, which they did. When that ultrasound came back, it showed that my gallbladder was fine. My stomach was fine, but it showed that I had something called severe hydronephrosis of my right kidney, which basically just means that the urine wasn't able to drain from the kidney into the bladder. And so when that happens, it backs up kind of outside the kidney. And so I was like, okay, that was unexpected. The next step after that was to get an abdominal CAT scan, because I thought then that it was probably more likely like a kidney stone, that was probably stuck, you know, trying to come out, and that typically happens. So they did the CAT scan of the abdomen, and that came back showing that it was not a kidney stone, but I had a mass around, my ureter, which is the tube that connects your kidney to your bladder. And in the report, it said that was highly suspicious for malignancy. That was pretty shocking, because that is nothing that I was expecting at all from that.
I can imagine. Being a nurse, you had no idea what was happening.
No, I thought the most obvious things. Like I said, I thought it was a gallbladder, and then I thought it was the kidney stone. Like, cancer was not even on the radar screen for me.
But it turned out, as you found out, that it was not cancer.
No, it took about 6 months of, I mean, I can't even tell you how many imaging tests I had, I had a few surgical procedures, trying to get biopsies of the sample. It was perplexing to the physicians that were treating me, because they were just not able to get a good sample. It was pretty inconclusive. They weren't able to really visualize it. I had PET scan, I had MRIs, I had CAT scans, I had urograms. It ended up going to what's called the tumor board at the hospital, because my urologist couldn't kind of get a handle on, you know, they were worried that it was cancer and time was ticking, but they couldn't get a definitive readout on what kind of cancer it was. And the tumor board at that point had basically said, you know, enough is enough. You have to take out the entire kidney and the entire ureter in one piece to biopsy the whole thing. And that's kind of unusual. The reason they did that was because, like I said, you couldn't really get a good sample. And as this, you know, is going on, they're noticing through the imaging that the right kidney at that point had been so compromised that it basically wasn't functioning anymore. So, you know, the loss of the kidney was already there. It wasn't that they were going to do any more damage by taking the whole thing out. So in essence, I was already operating with one kidney. So they made the decision to do that. And in May of 2023, I underwent an open nephroureterectomy, which is a very long word to say that they opened me up and took out the entire kidney and most of the ureter. When I was in surgery, it was both unexpected and shocking for the doctors, because like I said, I'd had all of these scans, and all of the scans had only shown this blockage that was in my ureter. And when they opened me up, my entire retroperitoneal space, which is in your back, basically it's where your kidneys sit, was full of this dense fibrotic tissue that extended down into my pelvis. It had not been seen on any scans.
And nobody was expecting this. Nobody
expected it. They were shocked. They were shocked. I had a PET scan, and the only thing that showed up was this, you know, blip on my ureter. So they were not expecting it at all. And it was so dense and so fibrous that they weren't even able to remove the entire ureter. They were only able to cut above where that stricture was, because it was so entangled in the tissue that it wasn't safe to do.
Let me interrupt if I could. According to what I'm reading here, it says after the surgeons took out your right kidney and most of the ureter, 2 weeks later, pathology results showed no malignancy, and you were back to square one.
Yes. So, yeah. I mean, thank God I didn't have cancer, but it was a very long 2 weeks, you know, waiting for that pathology report. And, you know, to back up a little bit, probably like a month before the surgery, I actually had made an appointment over at Mass General Hospital with the rheumatology clinic, which unbeknownst to me was actually part of the clinic was the specialist for IgG4-RD. My urologist kind of offhanded in one procedure said to me, I wonder if what we're seeing is retroperitoneal fibrosis. And I'd never heard of it before. But if it wasn't cancer, I was all for it. So I was like, all right, well, let's look at that. And during my search of like, well, who deals with this? It so happened that the people who were noted to be like the best at it were literally across town from where I worked at Mass General Hospital. Very lucky, and I know I'm very lucky that I live and I work in an area of the country that is like has like this kind of healthcare available to me. It really shortened the time, I think, between my diagnosis and, you know, between my symptoms and my diagnosis.
The fact that you are a nurse, how much of that helped you lead to a correct diagnosis?
I think it definitely helped. I mean, I certainly, you know, came at it with, you know, like I said, looking at kind of all the angles and like who deals, you know, not only like, you know, what is this, but who deals with this? Because I think one of the things that's very challenging with IgG4 is that it can affect any organ system in your body. And there are so many different manifestations of it and so many different presentations of it that it's not easy for people to navigate who deals with it, who sees this, because oftentimes it's not the rheumatologist that usually deals with this that is the first person you're encountering.
And also this disease, there are only about 20,000 people with it in the United States. And often, like you, it mimics cancer.
Yes.
So I have a question for you. The fact that you happen to live in the Boston area and it happens to be a specialist, that's wonderful. But for most people who don't live there and who do not have a medical background and are not nurses, how do they deal with the emotional stress of thinking they have cancer when in fact they don't?
It's incredibly difficult. I mean, I know and I've spoken to many people for whom this journey has been not months, but years. You know, I know people who have been on the verge of undergoing cancer treatment, people who have been in cancer treatment. You know, it's just, it's one of the most difficult, it's a very difficult disease to diagnose. And if you're living in, you know, an area more like rural healthcare or someplace where you don't, just don't have the access to major medical centers or anything like that, it has been incredibly challenging for people to get the right diagnosis and to get the treatment. And in the meantime, the disease is doing damage.
Donna, tell us, if you would, a little bit about your family and if they've been able to support you in this journey.
Sure. I'm married to my husband, Richard. We have been married for coming up on 21 years. And we have a daughter who's 20. Anya. And it was really challenging. It was very difficult. I think my husband felt very powerless. And he was also somebody who is very practical. You know, when all the cancer stuff was being thrown around and I was, you know, I was upset, obviously, and like being nervous because, you know, almost like knowing too much. You know, I'm a nurse. I understand what they were talking about when they were trying to be gentle about stuff, but I understand what they were saying. And at one point, I asked my doctor, the urologist, I said, so if this is cancer, if this is malignancy, what does that mean? I said, what if it is malignant? And he stopped and he took a deep breath and he said, well, it's not a good cancer to have. And I know what that means as a clinician. And I know he was trying to be gentle, but the cancer that they thought I had basically has a survival time of 3 to 6 months.
What cancer did they think you had?
They thought I had urothelial cancer. And actually, when I was discharged from the hospital from the surgery to remove my kidney, that was what my diagnosis was urothelial cancer. And so seeing that on in print and hearing that was just, you know, it was devastating. I, you know, at that point, my daughter was 17 years old. She was going to be a senior next year. And I was looking at like not being alive long enough to see her at her prom, to watch her graduate from high school. you know, it was just, it was devastating.
And yet your story seems to have a happy ending, even though there really is no cure for this disease. At least you know what it is. You know it's not cancer. And you have awareness. Yep. You're aware of it.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, before I go on to the next subject very briefly, now that you know what it is, what kind of treatment are you getting?
Currently, I'm very lucky that the FDA recently last year has approved the first treatment for our disease specifically. And I'm very lucky that I received my first dose of it in December, this past December. But up to that point, I had been through about 5 different lines of off-label treatments just to try and find something that would slow it down or address this. And it was just a very long road in that sense, because all the while we're trying all these different treatments, I know in the back of my head, it's still an active disease, and it's still, obviously it killed one kidney, and it's, and I have another kidney that is literally sitting in the same bed of tissue that destroyed the first kidney. And I'm always worried that, like, what's happening that I can't see, because none of this was seen on scan up until then. So it's not easy to monitor me, you know? So it's just like, in the meantime, you can live without one kidney. You can't live without two.
What therapy are you on exactly?
I'm currently on Uplizna. It's an infusion, and I got my first infusions in December. And so basically they're like startup infusions. I got 2 infusions 2 weeks apart, 1 infusion, then 2 weeks later, I got the second infusion, and then you get them every 6 months.
I see. And is this something you'll have to take for the rest of your life?
Possibly. You know, like I said, this is all still, you know, hopefully at some point, the goal is ultimately remission. And so that all gets kind of worked out, but probably, you know, there's no cure for our disease.
Of course. I hope you you have good insurance that's covering this, right?
Thankfully, I do. But it's still a struggle. I mean, I still had, you know, I luckily was able to, get some assistance from Amgen has a whole division where they can help patients navigate the insurance component of it, where they kind of they're like your advocate.
Are you still able to work?
Yes. Oh yeah, I do work. You know, my symptoms are they're not, luckily for me, they're not debilitating to the point where I can't work anymore. Like I said, my manifestation's a little different. Some people are very different. I'll have what we call flare-ups, and a flare-up in the disease, a lot of times it's just a lot of joint pain. You see this, it's like a flare-up that's pretty common with just autoimmune disease in particular. I get severe fatigue, and I get a lot of joint pain, and then I'll get more pain in my area, which is on my right side, kind of my right back where my kidney used to be. That's kind of where I feel it, but I'm able to work.
Okay, that's important. Just before we wrap up, I only have a minute or two left. As we know, April 4th is IgG4 Related Disease Awareness Day. I wanted to ask you, in connection with that, what are you doing now to help other people get a timely diagnosis?
That's a great question. So I work a lot with the IgG Forward Foundation, which was actually founded by Dr. Stone, who's like he's actually the doctor over at Mass General Hospital who runs the IgG4 clinic. But he's one of the prominent, you know, researchers and physician treaters for IgG4 related disease. And I work a lot with them to talk to people, online communities, to answer questions for people who are newly diagnosed or not diagnosed yet, to kind of guide them into what to look for, what to ask for, how to ask it, who to ask it. A lot of people want to know what doctors they need to see, how they can see, you know, get to somebody. So I do a lot of that work.
Wonderful. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I'm just super grateful that you're highlighting this. I mean, it's really important that doctors know more about this disease so that more people can get more timely diagnoses and get to treatment faster so they can preserve their organ function, which will ultimately lead to a better life.
Absolutely. Donna, thank you so much. We've been talking with Donna Shipp, who is a nurse and a mom. She lives in Boston, and she has immunoglobulin G4-related disease. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.